This is Distraction Therapy, a podcast from Rob Watson. Conversations about how we're coping at a time of change. Hello, it's Friday the 5th of February, and this is a Distraction Therapy podcast with me, Rob Watson, and today I'm joined by Awesome Molstom. I've got it right, hooray!
You got it right, yes.
You're probably the first person that I've ever pronounced their name right first time. Now, I know Awesome through the Artworks Alliance, and we've done some online events together. I'm not sure if we've ever met in person. Has it all been online?
It's all been online, yes. I don't think I was that involved in the Artworks Alliance until lockdown happened, so I think that's possibly why. But, you know, something good to look forward to when we come out of this.
It's definitely different, isn't it?
It is.
So the idea of this is just to kind of have I've got my cup of tea. I hope you've got a nice hot drink or, you know, cold drink or gin and tonic, whatever it is. Might be a bit early for your gin and tonic. And we're just going to, you know, have a conversation really about what we're doing to distract ourselves through the lockdown and how we're kind of dealing with it in different ways and just, you know, kind of knock around some ideas. So what's the lockdown been like for you? Where are you at the moment? Are you at that frazzled stage, or are you gliding serenely along the river?
I'd say lockdown's been pretty good for me, actually. I'm definitely not one of those people who said, I've got too much time and I've got nothing to do. I'm a very busy person, so I've just got through lockdown by keeping busy and doing lots of different projects. I have not baked any bread. I have to tell you that, because everyone else tells me that they bake bread, but I haven't done that once.
I suspect that's a media myth.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, so do I. Because I haven't done any. My cooking has gone lazier than before.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the obvious question is: tell us, what are those things that are keeping you busy? You know, it's kind of what is it? Is it personal projects, work projects, a combination of?
I retrained to become a coach and a professional facilitator about 2 years ago. So as soon as lockdown hit, I really threw myself into starting to build my own business. So a lot of my time has been spent on that and kind of starting to facilitate conversations with other people and organisations and doing some one-to-one coaching with people. But as part of that, I've also sort of done a lot of training and discovery and so that's been the focus, actually, that's kept me connected, I think is the right word, because through the coaching I've been connecting with a lot of other colleagues and a lot of other people. So I just feel like, okay, I've been stuck in Cardiff, I haven't been able to travel anywhere, but generally speaking it's been really nice. It's been really good to have the time to focus on having interesting conversations with people. Isn't that what we're all about at the end of the day?
Which part of Cardiff are you?
Are you in the centre? Adamstown.
Oh, I'm trying to remember. My Cardiff geography is not that good.
It's very central. So it's about 10 minutes to Cardiff Queen Street Station.
Oh, that is in the middle, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So, I mean, is that urban environment been conductive to your well-being? Or is it, you know, stressful?
Yeah, that's stressful, I would say. But I'm very lucky because I can walk down to the Cardiff Bay from where I am. So I can access the sea and just get some fresh air. And I do that a lot. That's the other thing I've been doing when I haven't been focusing on my work and developing all of that kind of stuff. I really have been outside a lot and climbing a mountain and, you know, when we've been allowed to drive to do exercise, which we're not currently in Cardiff, but I really have enjoyed the nature that's around me. So, and that's something I really want to keep when we come out of this, is just that weekly connection with birds and trees and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, Leicester's people probably know from listening to past podcasts, you know, Leicester's like, it's surrounded by roads, it's a spoke city, and the traffic just recirculates around the city, and you can't escape to the the waterfront, you know, the docks or the mountains, because there isn't any, you know.
Oh, I see.
You're in the middle. You can't escape. So what's that contrast? How have you, you know, that what does that do for you? That contrast of environment?
Well, it relaxes me and it recharges me. So then when I come back to the urban environment and come back to my projects, then I'm energized and I'm motivated to do stuff again, and it sort of relaxes my brain. I really love being outdoors. I just love the smell and the sounds and everything of being outdoors, thinking space, moving space.
And the weather doesn't bother you, is it? I mean, is the last...
Not really.
We had a lovely weekend last weekend, but then we had a return to a cold snap or relative cold snap.
Yes, it has been a bit cold this week, but generally speaking, it's just how you dress at the end of the day. So I am looking forward to spring when it gets a bit warmer. But yeah, I get out in all weathers.
Is it rude to ask, does your Swedish origins inform your ability to deal with the weather? Is that am I being rude asking that?
Not at all. I think so, actually, because we in Sweden we brought up to be outdoors. You know, people put their babies outside in prams in the middle of the winter, so it could be minus 25 degrees and snowy, and the baby's wrapped up in a sheepskin or something like that, and it's sleeping soundly outside. So we're just brought up with, you know, it's cold, fine, we'll just put some thick layers on and off we go. Or it's hot and sunny, great, let's cycle to the nearest lake and have a swim. So yeah, definitely, I would say being Swedish and being born there influence. The weather never stops me from going out.
Because it's the unintended consequence of the lockdown there. You can't stand in Cardiff city centre at 11 o'clock on a Friday night and watch semi-naked people wander about in the middle of winter with no clothes on.
No, we don't have that pleasure anymore. I'm not sure if that's a great loss, really, but... I hear you've been to Cardiff then. Nobody spoke.
I've been a few times, yeah. You know. Yeah. I've stayed in the city centre and enjoyed the nightlife.
Yeah. It's spoken quite like a pro.
Yeah, I am desperate to get back to doing something like that, but not in the way that it was done before.
Yeah,
you know, it's like please put a coat on, you know.
Yeah.
Put some trousers on or something. Yeah. So that kind of discovery, and has the facilitation process that you've been engaged in and learning about.
Yeah.
Tell us about that. What's that changed in terms of how you're approaching? If now you're really approaching everybody online, how's that working?
So that's been a learning curve, because when I started doing it, I went out and I worked with people in real life, and you can get really creative with people when you have them in a room and you know, use papers and coloured pens and draw the future, whatever the vision is that they want to work on. So that was a real learning curve to start to do that online. But in a way, I mean, I have to be honest, I do miss going into a room full of people and actually talking to people face to face. I think we all do at this point. It's just, you know, we're all desperate to get back and connect face to face. But the good thing, I think, about the lockdown and working digitally is that you can connect geographically better, so you can connect with people in from a wider range of areas. And I think facilitation wise that means that you can actually include so many more people's opinions and backgrounds, and it can be much more inclusive, and that's a really interesting way of working. Saves time on travel as well, which is good.
I was on a call for some work I'm doing, and I had two meetings back to back. One which was somebody in Malaysia, where it was 37 degrees. Uh-huh. And the next person was in Oslo, where it was minus 7 degrees. And it's like, wow, the what this technology does for us, this teleconference and stuff, is just, it's very quickly become part of the social infrastructure for doing things. And
it has.
Do you think we'll go back to, I mean, you know, actually, I take issue with your idea that people are desperate to get back to face-to-face meetings. I'm an introvert. I'm relatively happy with doing stuff like this. Yeah. And actually, usually when I go to public places and I'm amongst people, it's my avoidance face comes out. You know, it's like, please don't talk to me. You know, don't engage with me. I find that much more difficult. But the what are we going to keep? What do you think will filter out and kind of fade away?
Well, I have to say, a part of me is an introvert as well, and I do enjoy not having to leave the house, you know, and not having to be in those so awkward social situations. So I think there'll be a blended way. I think, you know, going to conferences and meeting people, I think, will come back to a certain degree. But a lot of these conversations that I used to, before lockdown, I used to go to London 2 or 3 times a week from Cardiff on the train for meetings. And it would take me 2.5 hours on the train to get there. Then I'd have a meeting for maybe 1.5 hours, and then I'd get on the train and get back. Now, actually, that's a waste of time, really, if you think about it, and money. So those kind of meetings now are happening on Zoom. And I think that will stay, because if every organisation is going to struggle from the backlash of what we've just been through. And financially, it doesn't make any sense to put people on a train and take a whole day out of work just for one meeting when you can do it online, and then you can get on with other stuff alongside it. So I think it'd be blended when we go back.
I suppose what it does is it makes you think about which of those. There's lots of people go to meetings because it's a routine.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, they go to meetings because actually you do need time out and away from it. I mean, one of the things, the downsides of working at your desk at home is that you kind of plug in at 8 o'clock in the morning, or I do, 8 o'clock in the morning, and almost go right the way through till 7 o'clock in the evening without a break. And I'm not building in time to escape and go out for those walks. How are you managing that?
Yeah, no, I'm absolutely the same, to be honest. And I was going to say, I guess that's the drawback of this, isn't it? You know, you don't have the commute in the morning, so you don't get to your office sort of refreshed, having had that walk or that bike ride. I've struggled with that, I've got to be honest, because I'm like you. I work from home, so it's easy to just get up and sit at my desk, and then I'm still there at 6 or 7 o'clock in the evening. What I've started to do in the last couple of months is that I have a pretend walk to work, and that works really well. So at 8 o'clock, I put my coat on and I go outside and I have a little route that I walk. It takes me about 35 minutes. And when I come back, I'm ready for the office. So I've invented a little commute just to get out. And that works really well. What do you do, Rob?
I'm a coffee person, so I tend to get up, make myself a coffee, sit and look at me messages. I make sure my websites are updated and that they're still there, run any updates. It's like a routine. Then there's a couple of websites I read, like a routine thing, and then look at the news, have another coffee. By about 8 o'clock, I'm starting to answer emails, and I'm really quick in the morning and focused. So for about 3 hours, I can sit and do stuff quite well. Later on in the afternoon and the evening, my thinking capacity kind of dissipates, and that's when I should be getting out and meeting people and doing stuff. But then you're sitting at your desk, that's when I find that I struggle. It's not so much the morning thing, it's the by the time you get to the afternoon, and if it's cold outside, it's like, oh, I'm not putting my coat on to just go out for a walk where it's pretty grim and there's too much traffic and that kind of stuff. So it kind of does feel a little bit I'm trapped to some extent. If I was living somewhere where it was, you know, there was a, I mean, there are some nice walks around here, and I've found doing the sound walks I've started doing are really, conductive to kind of opening that up again and looking at the world in a different way and hearing things rather than just, you know, kind of seeing the traffic, if you like, but looking for other things. That's really, really helpful. But no, my routine is kind of creature of habit in that respect. I like the idea. I love the idea of a kind of a creative way of doing that and a pretend walk. Maybe I should do that, like I'm having a pretend jog or a pretend you know, kind of commute.
It really has made a difference, I have to say, because I'm also a morning person. I work much better in the morning than I do in the afternoon. But it does make me feel like I've arrived, and I've arrived at my office, and it's time to work, and then I just get on with it. So, and before, I don't know what's... I think... I mean, obviously, I sat down and I did my work, and I was motivated. But I do think it's made me more motivated just having that little wander in the morning, just to clear the head.
Is it a case of finding more? You know, it's like presenteeism. Are we finding more work to do?
God, for sure.
You know,
sorry, I interrupted you.
No, it was a good interruption. So carry on. You know, so what have you discovered? You know, it's.
I find it really difficult to say no to meetings. Like, I don't have the excuse of, oh, no, I've got to catch the train to London. And I don't have time to do that this week. I find it really difficult when someone says, should we just jump on a Zoom and have a catch-up? So I find the intensity of the work much more. It's much more intense than it was.
Have you done the thing where you zoom out, where you zone out of something that's being said in the meeting that you're supposed to be taking part in? You end up looking at, I don't know, the Daily Mail website or something like that. I did this the other day, and I was asked a question, and I was like, I wasn't listening, and I just said something that I thought might be plausible, and I realised 3/4 of the way into the meeting. And what I'd said was completely inappropriate and wrong. It's like, because they were actually asking me about something completely different. I just couldn't hold my attention for that. I mean, no. I'm pretty good at it most of the time, but on this moment, I thought, I just need to let my brain wander somewhere for a bit.
Yeah, and I mean, there are meetings that you sit in and you go, oh, do it, you know, this is really not very relevant and I'd rather get on with something else. But you feel like you have to be there, you have to show up for it. And yeah, and I haven't done that exact thing that you describe, but sometimes I switch my camera off and I do other things while I'm on the call.
Yeah.
But I think we all do that, don't we?
Yeah. So there's an etiquette building up around all of this, isn't there? And I think there's a kind of fakery going on. You know, there's kind of business culture soon takes over where everybody has to look in a certain way, and people are putting. Do you dress smartly to go to work? Do you put, you know, you say you put your coat on, are you dressed up, or are you in your jogging bottoms and lounging around for the rest of the day?
Yeah, so I have a tendency to put jogging bottoms on and then put a smart top on top. So I'm 50-50, I think. But it depends what I do as well, because some days, you know, it depends who you're meeting with. If you're going to business meetings where you do need to look the parts, and I make an effort, and some days I just don't. But yeah, I think generally speaking, feeling that I've made an effort a little bit makes me feel more professional on Zoom. What about you? What do you do?
Gosh, I mean, I'm not a scruff, but no. I can't see the point in, yeah, we're in lockdown. Just like kind of put your ordinary, whatever's most comfortable on. But then when you catch yourself in the mirror and you go, I've really got to smart myself up. It's like, you know, you end up with lockdown hair and, you know, there's a few days extra where you've not shaved or something like that. And you kind of go, how am I coming across to people? And then you think, but then I find I have a judgment thing, which like if somebody is too well presented, I think what's important in your life or your organisation? Yeah. Where you're asking people to go through this process and they're still expected to, you know, represent the company, represent the organisation in a particular kind of, you know, that kind of performative kind of way.
Yeah.
And I think, does that actually mean that they're actually doing anything useful, you know?
Yeah, like, exactly.
And you know, you clock that when you go into a meeting in person. Because if you're on the train, for example, if you've got that 2.5-hour train journey, you cannot wear a very smart suit unless, you know, you've got lots of assistants and an expense account and things like that. So you have to travel in something comfortable. And I think people's expectations are a bit more casual than they maybe used to be. You know, but then at the same time, business meetings are much more relaxed and accessible. And I'm kind of inclined to push back against some of the kind of just the it's like a it's like a performance, it's like a kind of ritual that people have. And then when you ask people, well, why are you dressing up for this? And but then, you know, I was chatting to my mum, and she says she puts makeup on every day, all the way through the lockdown. You know, she doesn't. She gets dressed. She looks smart because she said it makes her feel better through the day. So I can I can go with that. You know, it's like, but and I think I need to shift my arse a little bit and tidy up a bit. But who knows? You know.
Yeah, I think it's. I think you can get quite sort of staid, though, with, when you're just at home, and you can sort of start to not look after yourself very well if you're not careful. So I think your mum's got a point. Getting up and putting your face on and dressing, putting something nice on, it does make you feel different. And I think it does shape your day. I don't always do it, but some days, recently, I've really started to feel like that is what I need to do, because I just feel like I'm always in jeans or... and there's nothing wrong with that. It's very comfortable, but always being in jeans. But when I did go to the office and I did travel to meet people, I would normally wear a dress to work. And I can't actually remember when I put a dress on last. You know, we've been in lockdown for pretty much a year. So just making that little bit of difference in the morning and making an effort, I do think it does make me feel better. And probably, I don't know if it influences my productivity, but it does make me feel better about going to work, even though I'm only going a few metres into the spare room.
I suppose the thing to do is to put some uncomfortable clothes on for the period of time that you're working, and then you have to take them off in order to relax in the evening.
Yeah.
Because I find I'm wearing the same clothes all day, whereas if you were in a business suit and then you get home and you go, oh, the first thing I want to do is get out of this.
Yeah, exactly.
And you want to put something more casual on, that might kind of mark... the point where you've said, well, there's no more work for the day, you know, it's over.
Yeah.
So put it behind you. So what kind of things have you been doing outside of work? What's your kind of focus on relaxation? You know, your walks, obviously, but, you know, media. Yeah. What have you been filling your time with? Box sets and music and books and stuff like that?
Music to a certain degree, but actually I've discovered Audible, which, you know, so I've been listening to loads of books, and then I discovered BorrowBox, which is my local library, which means that I can borrow books for free to listen to. So whereas before I used to physically read a book, I now listen to books all the time. And that's new, and I'm really loving it. I'm really loving being read to, rather than having to read at the end of the day or over lunchtime or, you know, whenever it is. So I think that's the biggest thing that I've picked up that's outside of the normal.
And what books, what stood out?
So at the moment I'm reading The Midnight Library, which is Matt Haig.
Yeah.
It's being read to me. I also discovered a series on Audible about the Victorians, which is read by Stephen Fry. And he's just so funny, I think. And it was partly dramatised as well. So it was really... I just felt like I was in the Victorian eras when he's talking about toilets and plumbing and, you know, murders and all sorts of things. So that was a really nice podcast kind of series to listen to. That was an Audible free. What else have I been listening to? There was a really interesting podcast about the effects of being outdoors on your mental health. And that was, I can't actually remember what that was called, but that was really interesting to hear the reporter was interviewing various different people going through a lot of outdoor experiences like hiking a mountain or just sitting in a park. But they were talking about the impact of mental health on being outside. So that was interesting as well. So, yeah, listening to things rather than reading things is the thing.
Yeah. The initial lockdown, I couldn't listen to any music, and we've had this long, you know, Leicester's in lockdown for the longest period of anywhere in Europe, so it's been pretty, you know, we had a short respite, I think about August, September, and then it went back again, but the that first period, I just couldn't get music into my head. I'd live for listening to music constantly. Mm. And then eventually I'd realised it kind of, as things settled down a bit, if you like, I started to be able to, and I really enjoyed sitting on the sofa in the evening, headphones on, with a book. And actually now I'm a bit frustrated that I'm busy with work, that I've not got the mental capacity at the end of the evening to do that, and I need to maybe retrain myself to get back to that as a norm, rather than putting something on Netflix or something. And
So what do you listen to when you listen to music?
Quite a bit. I mean, I've discovered Marla. I kind of do like it. I got into listening. I used to love listening to I mean, I've listened to all sorts of types of radio over the years, but Radio 3. But I just find the presenters really annoying, and I find the format just so disruptive. But Through the Night, which is where they play classical music performances, the presentation's minimalistic, and it's great. So, and I can now put it on BBC Sounds app. Is on the, I've got the Amazon Fire Stick thing for your TV and stuff. For me Netflix, so I can put it on through that, and I can just have the music on there in the background, and it's like 5 hours of concert. Some of the music I don't like, and some of it's fine. You know, it's a bit middle of the road kind of classical repertoire, but then it's you know, it's nice to just have it there playing in the background with minimal interruption. There's no news, nobody's reading out email messages or tweets, there's no promos or trails for any other programs. It's like this kind of just as Radio 3 should be 24/7 in my book. You know, maybe we need to get them to say, put this on a constant stream through the day, through the night, and it could just be something that we can have on in the background all the time. We're not interested in, you know, the smartness and the intelligence of your presenters. You know, just play the music.
No, exactly.
Yes.
You said that you couldn't listen to music in the early stages of lockdown. What was that about?
I've no idea, because I was kind of music, you know, kind of got thousands of CDs and stuff. I think it was just the general anxiety, not having that. You know, I think one of the things the lockdown's done is it's forced people to look inwards, because, you know, you can't go out, you're not getting that external stimulation, you're not meeting, you know, if you're extroverted, you're out talking to people, going to the pub, you know, going shopping, whatever it is, there's a busyness there and an activation. We're really encouraged to do that, and even as an introvert, you can't escape that. And it's like kind of we had this retreat, and what it does is it kind of brings forward things in your unconscious that are kind of you don't normally think about, and you're trying to find that equilibrium. I'm not saying it's not like some kind of Freudian thing where you get a kind of there's the subconscious and things come out of it that are shocking and deeply repressed, all that kind of stuff. I'm more kind of Jungian focused, so it's this idea that there's stuff going on in our psyche, you know, that we don't know about, but these images come forward. And I think I just kind of needed to hold back, because I walk around with, if I walk anywhere, I usually have headphones in listening to music to block out the sounds of the world, because it can be quite disruptive. So then to have music, what was the function of that music? Well, I've used it to suppress stuff in the past, maybe. I'm thinking off the top of I don't really know. Suppressed stuff in the past, but this was a point where actually, and I found sitting in for long periods in silence was much better, and not having to, you know, engage in information overload of pumping your head and your mind with stuff. So just a kind of a reorientation. But then I realized it kind of gradually crept back in, and I valued, as I say, I always thought Marla was like the most miserable. I'd only ever really heard, is it the fourth symphony that was used in Death in Venice? Those long strings, they're very dramatic.
Yeah, that's right.
I've always thought that was what Marla was, and it was like really depressing and dull and kind of, you know, slit your wrists kind of music. But it isn't. It's like very playful and upbeat. And it's a complete contrast. If you've only ever heard that bit, you've not heard the rest. I mean, I like Sibelius and people like that. I'm quite kind of Northern European romantic and Wagner and stuff. But it's, you know, the kind of the extended... And then I listen to things like soundtracks and stuff. Really good soundtrack. And somebody recommended watching it was the Chernobyl program that was out last year or the year before. And I downloaded the soundtrack for that just to listen to it, and that's really good. So it kind of take you off in different directions. So it's kind of what I try and do now is I signed up for Apple Music, so I'm not going out buying music. I used to buy a lot of CDs, and now I thought, well, I'll pay for this. I can always finish my subscription when I need to, and try and find some more different stuff, things to listen to.
Interesting. Very interesting. But you listen to music now again, yes?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So it's kind of, but you bounce between, I mean, at the moment it's like kind of, I was obsessed with the Beatles.
Yeah.
And just listening to that on loop, maybe because it was familiar, but because, you know, you're getting into more of the detail of the expression because you're hearing it in different ways. That's quite nice. But if you put, you know, ordinary pop music in front of me, I'd just switch it off. My days of listening to over-compressed chart music are well past me. What about you? What's your musical taste?
So I'm a massive fan of Divine Comedy and Neil Hannon. Because Neil Hannon is Divine Comedy, but he always plays with big orchestras, and he plays with sounds, and I think the lyrics are just really cleverly written. Every song tells a story on its own, and he's quite humorous as well in the way that he tells the stories within those, and he puts a really good album together. So the latest album, for example, is Office Politics, it's called. I mean, it's over a year old now, but he tells a story from beginning to end, so you can kind of follow it and really get into what he's singing and the instrumentation in the background. It's lots of violins and saxophones, and it's just really interesting how he composes his music.
So is it headphone listening, or is it speakers, or what's your preferred method for?
I headphone listen to him because I get a feeling that I can sort of really discern the different sounds of the instruments in the background and the tone of his voice. And if there's one thing I really miss in lockdown, it is live music. I just love going to listen to live music in a park or a festival or a sweaty venue. And I'm, you know, before lockdown, I used to do that on my own even, because I just, you know, on my own in a crowd, but I just love the experience of music and feeling the music coming through. And I get that when I listen to Divine Comedy on headphones. But I do listen to all sorts of things. And I've got a background of working in opera, so I'm really keen on that. So classical music and opera as well. I have a really eclectic taste in music. But what is key, I think, talking about it now, and I haven't really reflected on it before, is that it has to have different instruments. You know, you have to be able to hear the harmonies and the disharmonies and how that tells a story, and that's really interesting to me.
Yeah, I think I've matured in my musical approach. It's one of those things where you go, I wish I knew this now, there, you know, then. But yeah, I've always listened to music, and I've always had one of the things. I remember being on trains going to college in the 1980s and having a cassette player, you know, or portable CD player, as it might have been then, and listening to music constantly. It's an ever-present thing.
Yeah,
but I'm not a musical specialist in anything. I'm not like, I'm not cool in any way. No. I have so much. What's your guilty pleasure?
What's my guilty pleasure?
I'll go first. The other night, I listened to Jeff Wayne's War of the Worlds, and actually, I really enjoyed it, because it's like I just needed something in the back. I grew up with it, but it's not the kind of album. You know, it's like listening to, you know, Band on the Run with Paul McCartney. That kind of, I actually quite like that album, but it does have a reputation as being Alan Partridge esque type music.
Yeah,
it's certainly not cool, but.
I think I would have to say 1980s music. So a really good soundtrack. Something I'm quite indie band in those days. I was really into The Cure and Joy Division and that sort of type of music. And I do still listen to that. But for me, you see, music is, I don't know if it's a guilty pleasure as such, music is very much depending on the mood I'm in. So sometimes I want to listen to quite heavy, depressing stuff, and sometimes I want to listen to twinkly things that make me feel happy. So Beach Boys, for example. Beach Boys always makes me laugh. So I have a really eclectic taste in music, but it's all connected to how I feel that day or how I want to feel.
And do your friends know you for your taste in music, or is it, is it like hidden? Mm. Is it hidden away? Well, you know, this is the classical woman. Does she really need Kylie Minogue or Sonia albums to listen to?
I don't actually think that any of my friends know what I listen to. I think I'm quite secretive about what I listen to.
Some people are really good at wearing it on their sleeves, aren't they? And my brother went to see Joy Division play at Eric's in Liverpool in whenever it was. It would have been 82, something like that, I imagine. Yeah. And my other brother, who's a big fan, who's older, slightly older than both of us, he's forever jealous of that. You know, he's like, he saw Joy Division and I didn't. But I was like, no, I was never. I think the first one of the first albums I bought was the Radiophonic Workshop Doctor Who sound effects album.
Brilliant.
I think I've still got it. You know, it's there. You know, it's and that for me was like, you know, the first record I bought. There we go. What was the first record you bought? I think it was the disco version of the Star Wars theme tune, which is actually a really good record.
Yeah, absolutely. I think my first album was I know, it was the House Martins. What was that album called? I can't remember. I can visualize it, but I can't remember.
Was it the whole five?
That's it.
Something, whatever. Yeah, it was
their first album, with Happy Hour on it. That was my first album,
which was always a good pub song, jukebox song. It's kind of the move to online media means that you don't have that experience of sitting in a pub listening to music anymore in that way.
And also people listen to music differently, I think, because the thing about crafting an album from beginning to end, you know, you did put an LP on and you listened to it to death sometimes, but now you just, when people stream music, you just dip in and out, and there's playlists and everything. I think we listen to music in a very different way now from 20 years ago.
So who are the major artists that you think are completely overrated and you have to turn, you run a mile if somebody says, right, we're going to play, this track is by, for me, it's Bob Dylan and the Rolling Stones. I can't stand either of them. I honestly, if you put it on, I'd say, I'll go for a walk.
gosh, that's a really difficult question.
Radiohead, they're up there.
I like Radiohead. I do like Radiohead. I don't know. I'm more sort of, I don't like the disco type stuff. So the Kylie Minogue has had one or two good hits, but that's the kind of thing that I just wouldn't listen to. I would just go turn it off. It actually hurts my ears if it's too kind of electronic. But Bob Dylan is a poet, I think, although I don't really like listening to his voice. And Radiohead has its time and place, I reckon. But yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. But it would probably be something like Kylie Minogue that I would just go.
I listen to a lot of Roxy music and Bowie's ever present. You know, it's not. But I'm not. There's some people I kind of lost interest in certain attitudes to music when, I don't know. I call them the. Do you know when people who listen to BBC Radio 6 music?
Yeah.
And they go on about, yeah, you know, I know this band and that band and all the genres and stuff. It's like they're six music bores.
Yeah.
And, I saw them in Sheffield Student Union in 1993, something like that. And you're kind of going, well, you know, you either, you know, did nothing else with your life, or you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm suspicious of them. They're not for me.
Hip hop. If someone tries to make me listen to hip hop, I have a physical reaction and I walk the other way.
Yeah, hip hop and rap, unfortunately, doesn't do it for me. Disco is not too bad. I do quite like a bit of disco, but Barry, I have a rule that I'll only get up and dance if it's Barry White.
You can't beat a bit of Barry.
And it's the only thing that gets you moving these days, So, so what about your TV watching? Have you been distracting yourself with anything on TV?
You know, I watch very little on TV. Although recently I watched It's a Sin on Channel 4, and that was just brilliant. I have to say, it was so well written, so well performed. I don't know, have you seen it?
I've kind of avoided it, and the reason is I kind of grew up in that era, and I don't really want to revisit it. I don't mind the fantasy version, you know, but it's like, you know, I was in Manchester in the mid 80s, and it's probably not what it was like as being depicted by
Russell T. Davis.
Russell T. Davis, I find he's a bit of as a character, I think he's one of those people who's been elevated to a position as spokesperson.
Yeah, he has.
Whereas, and he seems to enjoy and revel in that. Whereas, you know, you're not perfect, and you're not describing everybody's experience. But
no, I think, I mean, he's done a lot of stuff, but various, you know, queer as folks and that sort of thing as well. But I think It's a Sin was really well created as a piece, and I mean, I was quite young still in the 80s, but I mean, I was heading for my 20s, but I was aware of all of that stuff happening, but I was not old enough to understand the severity of it, I guess.
Yeah.
Of all these young men dying. You know, I heard about that, but it wasn't real to me. So watching it was quite an interesting reality check, I think, as well.
Yeah, it's a bit like, I once asked my mum, said, you know, what was the 60s like for you? And she goes, I was too busy having babies to notice.
Yeah.
Like, one of five, you know. And, yeah. And you know, that, you know, you don't really, I suppose it does take a good dramatist kind of sets that up. So it says, this is what this period was about. And all of this stuff was going on. And you're navigating your way through that, I suppose. So.
Yeah. Other than that, I love a good crime drama. I'm really big on like Scandi Noir and really dark and kind of violent crime.
Now you see,
does that say about me?
Well, again, that was one of the things. My partner was watching lots of horror movies and zombie movies and stuff, and I cannot stand them. And I thought there's something about, I can't watch murder mysteries and things like that, because it's like, I don't want that in my head.
No. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, no, but it's just, as we were saying about, in the same way that music, you know, stopped, it was like, no, I can't entertain this. You know, this is too, if I go introvert, if I go in on this stuff, where will you come from?
Exactly.
It? I have watched recently, though, and I've held off and held off and held off, is RuPaul's Drag Race. I watched the first half of the first episode of the first series of the BBC one, the UK one.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, this is just appalling. Yeah, this is just, that's, yeah, it's kind of, what's going on with this? And then I started watching the first half of the second series and just got hooked with it. And it's kind of, it's got its faults, but it just, so we've now gone back and we're watching the American series.
Brilliant.
And it's just, for some reason, it's just kind of, I think it's been good because it's got, when it's allowed to be, if you like, British and working class,
So
it's not policed in the same way, and there's a lot of crudeness to it, and a lot of that's missing from TV humour these days. I grew up, you know, Carry On films and, you know, British sitcoms in the 70s and stuff, where there wasn't this. I think now, you know, and a lot of people have complained about how, you know, to use a phrase, woke or politically correct things can be. And yeah, and I don't buy that stuff, because I think it's used as an antagonistic way to just talk about generational change.
Yeah, sure.
But, you know, that kind of repression of, you know, it's like the you know, the BBC Radio 1 banned Fairy Tale of New York for the, you know, the language in there. And it's like, actually, I find that a really affirming moment in the song. Who are you to police what we say, you know, what's said?
Absolutely.
You know, if people find it meaningful, why should you? And so Drag Race was just this, and actually RuPaul is really funny as a TV personality.
Yeah, I've seen one or two, but I just haven't got fully into it. But I've heard really good things about it from people who watch it. So
I don't think it's good.
No, but it's entertainment, isn't it?
Yeah, and it does have a kind of narrative quality to it. Yeah. But it's like a kind of during lockdown, it's been one of those things where you go, yeah, you can let yourself get emotionally involved in it rather than always thinking about something.
Yeah,
you know, I should like this, and I should be seen to liking this. And this is, I ended up the other week just having a day on the sofa, tired from work and cold outside. Didn't need to really do anything, so I just spent the day on the sofa and binge watched RuPaul. So, have you done that? Have you managed to do that kind of binge watching?
I have. Binging? My guilty pleasure, my guilty TV pleasure, is Homes Under the Hammer. I can watch back to back Homes Under the Hammer and just feel like I'm in heaven. Honestly,
why?
Yeah,
what,
I know.
What is it about? I know of it, but again, it's.
Well, it's Martin is the main presenter, and he's just hilarious. He's just this sort of slightly overweight, middle-aged man who wanders around houses and makes really bad jokes. But it's just so funnily written, and with the music background on it, they put really like tracks, so when they walk up the stairs, they have to walk long for miles. They go, "I will walk 500." You know, it's just the way they put the whole thing together. It could be what could be a really dire show. It's just really funny. So that's something that I can just watch and watch, but I don't talk about very often. Although it's out now, isn't it?
Because you get that element of it, don't you? Which everybody actually watches stuff like this. But you've got the BBC, and a lot of, I don't know if you noticed it, a lot of charities and public organisations and stuff, certainly in the kind of areas that we work in, they were all parading their virtue online. We've transformed this, and we've made all of this stuff available, and we've put all of these arts performances and things online, and you know, all that kind of stuff. And I'm just checking that. I think the postman's knocked at the door. Bear with me. This always happens.
No problem.
I should have told you to carry on list talking, and we could have just done that. I'll leave that moment in.
Yeah.
At least I didn't have to run all the way downstairs. So, sorry, where were we? We were at all of the virtue signalling from lots of organisations.
Yeah.
So it's like, and actually, what really will seep in are those things like, you know, the kind of little, to use the word, quirky, you know, indirect kind of things, which, you know, they're the reference points that we really will go. There's actually the solidarity, you know, about, you know, solidarity around that, rather than it being perfect and manicured and well presented.
I also think it's comforting. I think, you know, a lot of these things that we watch is like, I watch Homes Under the Hammer because I feel like that is just something that's been going for years, and it's almost like a comfort blanket, you know. It's always there. It's always the same format. You know exactly what to expect. And when we've been in this pandemic and everything's so uncertain. I mean, it's still uncertain, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's sort of nice to just crawl under that comfort blanket for half an hour at lunchtime, you know. It's just, that's what it is. It's comfort TV.
I did avoid going back over all kind of old episodes of series of Star Trek.
Yeah.
That was something that I kind of didn't want to commit myself to.
No, fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah.
I'm enjoying American Gods at the moment. It's quite good. So.
Oh, okay.
The third series is actually improved from the second series. So.
I might check that out.
And when people say to you, oh, you know, it's like Breaking Bad. I didn't get it. They say, oh, but season two and season three are so much better. And it's like, well, yeah. I'm going to sit through 24 hours of a series or something just so I can get to where it should be good.
No.
Why would I do that? Yeah, you know, I've got other things to do.
Exactly.
I've got Marla to discover.
Yes. Well, very important stuff.
So what kind of stuff do you think you'll look forward to doing and going, when we're as we edge out of our lockdown, if we edge out of it?
Yeah, so the first thing I would really like to be able to do is to drive out of Cardiff, because we have been we've only been allowed to travel as far as we can walk for forever. So I'm really looking forward to just driving to a beach, and not a beach that's in Cardiff, a proper beach where there's no houses or anything around, and just enjoying the sea. But other than that, I think, what do I really miss? I used to run parkrun every Saturday, and I also used to volunteer for parkrun. So I really miss that community, and I can't wait for that to come back. That's one thing that I'm really looking forward to. And live music. I have missed live music and live events so much. So that's, you know, in the summer, I'm really hoping there'll be some outdoor festivals or music events that we can just sit socially distanced in a park and just enjoy it. Something like that would just be amazing for me coming back. But I have been lucky, I have to say, because I've had quite a nice time this lockdown. I've quite enjoyed being locked in a house and not having to go anywhere. So,
That is spoken like a true introvert.
Yeah.
So, I don't want it to be over. I don't want to go back to all those meetings. I think I'm actually looking forward to jumping on a train and going over to Nottingham and just wandering around some different streets and going to TK Maxx or something point. And I'm desperate to go and sit I realise how the routine of my life is like coffee shops.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you reach that midpoint, for me, I reach that midpoint in the afternoon and your productivity dies. But I used to go to a coffee shop and do a bit more there or pretend to do a bit more there. And not having that option, I think, is what the frustrating part is. So, I think I definitely need to kind of get out and get into the hills we're right, but in Leicester, we're right bang in the middle of the country, possibly furthest away from the coast, from most major cities. Direction you go to, you can't get there. But I'll go up and visit family in Liverpool at some point, and just kind of have a wander around all the places that are different. And
yeah, absolutely. No, coffee shops I do miss. I used to take my computer to one particular coffee shop nearly every day. And it was like, it was every table with people working together. So it was like a little working community. But there were some real characters there. There was one man who just talked to people. He spent his entire life just talking to people. And he wrote a book about it as well.
Oh, wow.
And
so it was for a purpose. He wasn't just like a crazy person.
Well, he was a slightly crazy person, but a lovable crazy person. He would literally just walk to parks and sit on benches and talk to people, and he would go into coffee shops and talk to people, and just collecting their stories. And he was a really interesting character, and I often wonder since lockdown what happened to him, because he must be so lonely now that he's not able to go and communicate with so many people.
Well, we should give him a microphone and say, don't just talk to people, record it as you talk to people, and we'll put it on the radio.
Yeah, he would be well up for that, I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure, yeah.
And in terms of work-wise, and are you going to be keeping your head to the grindstone, or are you going to fake that and show the world this avatar of this industrious, you know, committed work person, or is it really underneath, you know, the half and half, you know, actually I'm having a sleep on the sofa for a few hours and I'm watching binge-watching Homes Under the Hammer?
Oh, maybe a mixture of it all, I don't know. But I'm sort of changing what I do, and I'm quite excited about the future. And you know, operating as a coach and facilitator, I've been a producer and a project manager in the past. So I'm quite excited about the future. I'm going to carry on working from home or from coffee shops, I think, when we're allowed to work from coffee shops. I can't see myself going into an office necessarily again.
And as a freelancer now, is that something you're happy with? Are you comfortable with that?
Yeah, definitely.
We'll give you, I mean, I wouldn't go. You know, as long as the work keeps coming in, I'm happy to be doing the freelance and stuff. I'm not. The thought of being part of a corporate organisation sends chills through my spine.
Yeah, no, I'm the same. I like being in charge of my own time, and you know, being in charge of what I do when I do it, and not having to be at a certain place. I mean, obviously, we all have to go to meetings and that sort of thing. But I like being in charge of my own destiny, I guess, in that sense, knowing what my week is because I've planned it out. So, I'm happy with that. As long as the work keeps coming in, it's a good place to be, I think. Cool. There's a certain amount of freedom within being a freelancer.
Well, let's hope it picks up, and because there's lots of people who are still, you know, excluded. And I suppose we're in that boat. Recently signed up to being freelance and, you know, missing out on, I don't know if you did, missed out on any of the kind of government support. I'm hoping to get a little bit more now. I actually filed my first accounts this year, which was a milestone, I suppose, but something I'm not used to doing. But, you know, it's normally cause for celebration. But, you know, this time round, it was like, what I mean, I've been marking my time with... Yeah. And I sat here this morning, and it was like, and then I heard the bin wagon down the street coming to empty the bins. They do it on a Friday. I'm like, oh my God, it's Friday, the bins. And I had to rush around and put all the bins out. And it was like, that's how I'm measuring my time at the moment. So big achievements seem like nothing. And small little things, the routine of our life, you know, kind of having done the dishes or having put the bins out, seems to be where you kind of go, hey, I've done something purposeful today, you know.
Yes, I've achieved. Hurrah.
Yes, let's keep a grasp of that. It's been wonderful chatting. If anybody wants to get in contact with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
My email address, which is flourishcoachinguk.
Cool.
At outlook.com.
I'll put a link on the website for that on the blog for it, so it'll go out with that. So
perfect.
Also, it's been lovely having a conversation.
Thank you.
If anybody wants to find any more information about this occasional series of podcasts and sound walks, go over to robotsandmedia.net and look for the Distraction Therapy podcast. It's up on iTunes and Google as well. And you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter, which is at RobWMedia. But thanks very much, Orsa, and we'll speak again soon.
Definitely will. Thank you, Rob.
You've been listening to the Distraction Therapy podcast with me, Rob Watson. If you want to get in contact, I'm on Twitter and Instagram at RobWMedia, or visit the website robwatsonmedia.net.